The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Good morning, Long Island, and welcome to DDI on Autism on 103.9 FM, keeping an eye on autism and giving a voice to its Long Island community. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Romas. Again, so glad that you can join us this morning as we share and explore all relevant issues related to autism spectrum disorder. We have with us this morning returning guest, Eric Enlick. Dr. Enlick is a clinical psychologist and the founder of Top College Consultants, a firm which helps autistic students nationwide through the college application process. He has co-authored a new book from AAPC Publishing, Older Autistic Adults in Their Own Words, The Lost Generation, in which the three authors, all on the spectrum themselves, report on 150 autistic adults around the world. You know, let's dig right in. Welcome, Dr. Enlick.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's good to have you back. I thought we could start a little bit, perhaps, with some discussion about your own journey through autism.
Sure. So, you know, sometimes an event can happen to you that can change your future forever, but also sometimes an event can happen to you that changes your past. And I've had both experiences. The first one, which launched me into the world and the community of autism, was in 1999 when my son was about 2.5, and my wife and I brought him to a developmental pediatrician who, after meeting with us, turned to us and said, "Your son has autistic disorder." And instantly, it's one of the few moments in my life when I knew my life has just changed forever. And it did, and it threw us into the world of early intervention and applied behavioral analysis and special education and speech therapists and on and on and on. And that went on for quite some time. And about 15, 16 years later, my wife and I were together again, sitting at an autism conference, listening to the keynote speaker, who was very articulate, entertaining, Sarah Hendricks. She had worked in the field of autism for years, wrote books, helped clients, even got a master's degree in autism studies. And she discovered in her 40s that she herself was on the spectrum. And as my wife and I listened to her, there was this aha moment that we both experienced simultaneously, realizing that somebody else in our family besides our son was autistic, namely me. And so that was another life-changing moment for me, where I kind of looked back at my past and saw everything through a different lens. And it also changed my future, because I really focused more on working with autistic clients, and now specifically, you know, helping them through the college process, and of course, getting involved in writing this book.
So was that the point in which you became aware of your own diagnosis? So
yes.
You were in your 40s and really just beginning to understand.
I was in my 50s, actually. Yeah.
Oh, you were in your 50s?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great springboard for I think the work you've been doing, the book you've co-authored. We're seeing more of that, aren't we? More people who are getting this diagnosis later in life.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about why that is and what the implications of that might be for persons with the diagnosis and supports and perhaps the family. Both if you're comfortable from a personal as well as a clinical perspective.
Yeah, well, when we talk about this in the book a lot, sort of we give some of the history of the autism field and how the diagnosis developed and how it impacted folks. And because of when autism was really first recognized, and even more so when Hans Asperger's work was translated into English, which was much later. That wasn't until decades later. Many of us who are over 50 weren't recognized in childhood as being on the spectrum. It wasn't on anyone's radar screen. Autism was seen as being extremely rare, and there wasn't really a concept of autism applying to people with average or above average intelligence, people who might be highly verbal, capable of going on in education. So many of us sort of slipped under the radar and didn't discover it until much later in life when we were, you know, like me, maybe hearing a talk, maybe when your child was diagnosed and you realized, wow, as I hear the doctor asking me about my child's questions, some of them apply to me, maybe watching, reading an article, watching a TV show or a movie featuring an autistic character, and having that aha moment of like, oh, wow, that character really reminds me of me. So a lot of people don't have this moment until adulthood.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think we're seeing that more and more. And when you reference childhood at a different period, you know, 40 to 50 years is a real chunk of time. And I'm thinking that when you think back at least that amount of time, if someone was evidencing the symptoms, it was often some of the symptoms, and they're varied, it was often dismissed as an eccentricity rather than anything that might be enduring or anything that could either be favorable or not for the duration of a person's life. And I'm going to ask you, as you became aware of your own diagnosis, how did that affect you?
Well, you know, at first, sort of like if you're familiar with the process of responding to a trauma, you know, the first reaction was denial and shock. And then after that, there were other reactions, including, like I said, sort of going through my past and seeing everything differently through a different lens. Most of us, and you know, as you said, we surveyed 150 folks for the book. The vast majority were bullied in childhood. So kind of understanding, why didn't I fit in? Why was I bullied? Why did I have these issues with other kids or with teachers? So much started to make sense. As one person I know says, the pennies keep dropping. You just keep realizing more and more things start to make sense. Yeah. And one of the foundations for the book was another book called The 9 Degrees of Autism, talking about these different stages that people go through after diagnosis. And if you continue through these stages, you can get to a point of acceptance where you embrace your diagnosis and it becomes a positive part of your life. And that did happen to most of the 150 folks that we surveyed and interviewed for the book. Most people got to a very positive point, as I have, and in many cases kind of connected with the autism community, made autistic friends, really becomes part of your identity in a positive way.
How is the book organized? Meaning that you have 150 people who are essentially informing your observations and your inferences. What did that look like? How did you develop the book, and what was the departure point for these kind of discussions?
Yeah, so there's three authors. The first author, Wilma Wake, was the one who kind of, it's her brainchild, and I signed on after she had started creating the survey. And I helped get it distributed around the world. So it's not just Americans. We've got approximately half Americans, half folks from the UK, and then a smattering of people from other English-speaking countries. And the book is, as I said at the beginning, there's quite a bit of the history of the field from the beginning understandings of autism and the different phases that we've gone through with the whole, you know, refrigerator mother theory that was an unfortunate chapter, all the different kind of developments in the field. And then we have a lot of, so that there was a survey that we gave to our respondents. There were 150 questions or so, 140 questions. So there's tons of information that we've collected about them. And we look at sort of how did they differ from the general population? What are the different subgroups within this group? You know, males versus females, folks from different ages. We ask them about lots of different areas of their life, their work experiences, their early childhood experiences, their relationship experiences. So we kind of go through the book and talk about what we found in all those different areas. What was their childhood like? What has their experience in the career world been like? And then we also have some of their individual stories at more length. So you hear narratives of their lives. So it's a combination of sort of individual personal stories along with survey data from the whole group.
So it seems like it's a combination of research, potentially a kind of a qualitative kind of a rich kind of qualitative research from which you are drawing inferences, it seems, around the lifespan, but particularly with an emphasis as people get older with autism. And I know that our listeners are going to be especially interested in what that looks like and if there are differences between the genders, between, you know, certainly between genders. Are there other demographic considerations that could affect what aging looks like in this population? Does the book focus on those kind of differences?
Absolutely, yeah. In the gender area, so we had a much larger percentage of women in our study, almost half, which is much more than what we see in most studies. And men were more likely to report being heterosexual.
Well, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because we'll come right back to it. My guest is Dr. Eric Endlich. The subject is getting older with autism and the new book in which he's co-authored. Stay with us.